Hey guys, before we roll into this next episode, I wanted to thank you all for the kind words that you've left on social media and for all of you that you have subscribed and left reviews. Those reviews help me keep this podcast free. And Matthews, one of my sponsors, was gracious enough to give me a bow to give away to one of you fans that has subscribed and left a review. So if you'd like to win a brand new Halon 32 with a 6-inch brace height and a Sitka Elevated 2 camo, all you need to do is subscribe on iTunes and leave me a review, and you'll be entered to win. And I'll be giving away that bow the first week of June to one lucky winner. So thanks again, and enjoy the next episode.
Welcome to another edition of Interviews with Hunting Masters. This is a special live podcast, and got a good buddy of mine, Garrett Johnson, on the phone, otherwise known as the Coyote Sniper. And we're going to talk today a little bit about coyote hunting. So what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I can't complain. You know, it's one of those days, stuffing 10 gallons of shit in a 5-gallon hat. So just trying to keep up.
Good, good. So,
how about yourself?
Yeah, it's been crazy nuts. I'm still at work, so just trying to do this and help you out right here in the meantime.
Awesome. Well, I got a couple of questions for you, and hopefully we'll get some live questions coming in here. But before I get started here, I want to thank everybody that's been leaving us feedback on iTunes and Podbean. That stuff helps us keep this podcast free. And if you've been living under a rock and don't know, I'm giving away a Matthews Halon 32 just to say thank you to those people that are been supportive of the podcast. So all right, without further ado, let's get into this. So basically my first question for you is, do you do any scouting for predator calling, or are you just kind of willy-nilly get out there and pick spots?
I'm not gonna lie, some places are definitely willy-nilly, but that's part of your scouting, I think. Absolutely. Track, sign, shit in the road basically is gonna let you know that they're in the area. I mean, it's a repeat, but I know there's some guys here listening that don't know some of that stuff. So that's huge. I mean, even if you're seeing it chalky white poo, you know, you're still in the area of coyotes, but you definitely want to see that black and brown fresh stuff on the road. They typically like to come to those roads, I've found, because over my years of trapping and things like that, I've learned a lot from trapping in the territorial boundaries that coyotes have.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. They come to those roads because that's their spot. It's just like a railroad track or a river, something that just tells them, you know, that's why a trapper always traps on the corner of a, you know, fields and stuff, because that's where all the coyotes come.
Right.
And that's key. I don't go out and pre-scout a couple days before I'm going to go hunt the area by howling at these coyotes. Les Johnson actually just went over that, and I'm on the same page as him in a lot of things, man. That guy is amazing. He is definitely my idol in predator hunting, him and Randy Anderson. Grew up a little boy watching him and that. So like he says, you know, I feel like if you go out there the night before or a couple nights, you're just alerting those coyotes. Those coyotes know that you rolled into that area, shut off your truck, and started howling at them. You know, they know something's not right about that, I feel. There's other guys that have totally different views, but that's my view and my take on that whole deal. Scouting as far as howling at coyotes and stuff, I don't think that's a bad idea at all. But at different times, especially like your local areas, I would say, you know, you're going to know from calling and going out and calling these coyotes and hearing them and knowing where they're going to be, for sure.
Right,
you know, John, anybody can kill coyotes with with a bow. They know what they're doing.
It's a lot of trial and error. A lot of trial and error.
I mean, it's usually when I'm out mule deer hunting or something, you know, we'll always squeak or do something and try to get one with a bow. But it seems like every time I draw back, it's like, whoop, there they go. So, yeah. I mean, there's definitely doing there. So,
yeah, I spent a lot of time developing the setup. I don't get a whole lot of, I don't kill a whole lot of coyotes anymore because I only archery hunt them. But, you know, I try to maximize my chances by spending a lot of time getting the setup just right so that if they do come in, I'm going to have a shot opportunity. So,
yeah, it's no different. That's something that I probably need to learn a little bit better as far as going about, you know, setting up, even if it's, you know, if you're setting up for a bow shot every time, you're really concealed. I know that.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with, you know, getting yourself set up to be concealed and getting them to come the way you want them to come. It's setting up funnels and pinch points and stuff like that so that they're going to do what you want. You know, you could call in a good area and get a coyote to come in if you're, you know, and shoot in any direction pretty much if you're a good shot with the rifle. But to do it with the bow, you have to get them to come where you want them and stop where you want them to stop. So, yeah,
no doubt. But back to the scouting end of it, that's 99% of it right there. Scouting, knowing where the coyotes are, because if you know where the coyotes are, you're gonna kill some coyotes. You just gotta know where they're at. You know that you can't go into, you know, somewhere and expect to kill coyotes if they're not there. They gotta be there.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Sounds stupid or silly, but it's like, you know, people don't grasp that sometimes that you can't call stuff in if they're not there. And that goes for any hunting. You know, you can't go hunt deer where there's no deer and so on and so forth. So you got to find those habitats.
Yeah, I mean, but you can have call shy coyotes that aren't going to talk to you. Or if they do talk to you, they're going to warning bark and they're not going to come in. They've been hammered, and that happens a lot here in Utah and everywhere else, but really a ton in Utah. We have a lot of predator hunters, and it is only getting more popular. This is like a double-edged sword for me, what I'm trying to accomplish with this. And, you know, it is what it is. It's like my buddies at Tines Up and Brown Gold, you know, they kind of cut their throats, but in the same aspect, they did what they wanted to do, and they made it work, and they made shed hunting huge. It's like a religion in Utah. So, anyway.
So one of the other questions I got for you was, so it's kind of relating to scouting. So when you're looking for a starting point, you know, basically you're going into a new area, you take a look, you take a review of what you got as far as terrain and so on. What's your starting point? What do you like look for?
I look for places that I'm going to be able to hide the vehicle or the four-wheeler or whatever we're on, definitely first. I mean, if you're just going into a flat, wide-open valley, there's tons of coyotes in there, but how are you going to hide your vehicle? That's another thing that goes back to the scouting end of it and the setup and everything, you know. You got to find two-track roads, little washes. You can be driving down. I've drove down wide open country, but if there's a little ditch or a little draw, you can just duck your truck into. Those coyotes are used to trucks coming through there and whatnot.
Right.
Just truck and get it, you know, get that roof hit, get it not glaring, and get to calling. Just walk up there, you know, 50 yards and sit down and start calling, you know. That's huge. Is finding places you can hide the vehicle.
Oh yeah, really. I agree. I agree fully.
You're, you know, a competition hunter, you're going to need to make anywhere from 15 to 30 stands a day, depending on what kind of competition you're in. And that's something you definitely need to be ready for is being able to make multiple sets. So that's what I look for the most, basically. And just broken up country, somewhere I can hide too. Once I get the truck hit, somewhere I can hide too.
Right. So I we just got a question came in from Scott Sellers. What's up, Scott? How do you get a coyote to commit if they're already like very educated, basically? You know, they know something's up. They're hanging up out there. What are some of the things you do to try to get them to commit?
They're hung up. They're sitting up on top of the ridge. Maybe they've warning barked. I don't know. I throw the book at them. I do stuff just completely. I look at the remote and I go, man, what did somebody not do to this coyote? Maybe sit there and wait and let his little wheel spin. Let it, you know, let him really think about why it's quiet for as long as it's been quiet. 10, 15 minutes. If you really want to put the time on that coyote, make his little brain just, because if you quit calling and he didn't see you get up or walk out, his little wheels are going to be cranking and wondering what was actually going on over there. And he might actually just start bebopping his way over, you know, right. and eventually coming and investigating what was in his country, or if it wasn't his country, just kind of coming around, checking it out. That's why you kill a lot of lone males, is because there's not a stab. They don't have established territory yet.
Right.
If I'm trying to get a call shot coyote to commit, I don't know. It's just like Al Morris, you know, he loves to go to that bull squeaks. He always tells everybody about the bull squeaks, those hung up coyotes. They start twisting their head and showing different postures, and maybe it might shake them loose. You just never know. But if you can't, man, dial up and take a shot. I don't typically ever shoot over 300 yards, but a lot of these guys are capable of shooting distances, but I'm really not into that because that just creates even more call shy coyotes.
Right, yeah, because if you miss. We just got another question come in from Brian Hayden. He was asking if we use decoys along with electric calls. I don't typically use decoy. I have in the past. I don't see anything against them, except for it's just another thing to carry around in the woods. But what are your thoughts?
I have mixed reviews on this, just for the simple fact that I've had coyotes run off when they see the decoy multiple times this year. So I actually tucked the decoy away a little bit this year. I'm running the Lucky Duck Revolution this year. I'm on their pro staff, and there is a built-in decoy in this call. Mm-hmm. And it has awesome features, and that is one of them. And it's all ran off the remote. It's right there. It's packed up, and it's ready for you to try to use. And on a pup, there's really nothing better. If the pup's never seen that, that sucker will just come out and rip it right out of the call. But, I mean, those are few and far between certain times of the year. I think anywhere from September through October, a decoy is a great thing. Maybe me personally, I put it away after that. Right. And then as far as like a Montana decoy or something like that, I have it in my arsenal, but I don't like packing it out there. Honestly, it's just too much. I got way too much in my hands these days. It seems like as much as possible. It's just getting crazy what people think it takes to call these coyotes in. And I think people just need to stick to the basics, really. And just go back to what it is. If it doesn't work, like everybody said, play the rabbit. Go out there and play the rabbit stress, man. It's killed more coyotes than anything. Randy Anderson taught me how to howl, and I learned a lot by speaking the language of a coyote. And that's where I focused, because I was having a really tough time calling coyotes in Utah. So I went 10 years ago and I started learning how to howl, and that's all I did. And me and my partner, Brian Morrill, we focused on howling a lot more there for quite a few years. We were a lot more successful in February than a lot of guys. And so we kind of stuck with that. So now I've kind of got that in my arsenal, and that's kind of what, I don't know. I about decoys and that, you know,
I haven't messed with coyote vocalizations much. I know I've had some success with, lone female sounds. I got lucky a couple times, with, like a lone, male challenge, stuff like that. But, it's not something I've ever really got into. I, you know, and going back to the decoy thing, I've gone as far as just hanging a feather in the bush, you know, a white feather dangling from a piece of fishing wire or something like that, a fishing.
That's same thing.
You know, it's just something to catch their eye for half a second. You know, it's mainly to get them to stop. As you know, hunting coyotes sometimes can be drive-by shooting. So, and when you're shooting with a bow, it's kind of tough to get them to, you know, to stop where you want. So, but yeah, rabbits always been good to me. Like you said, I've killed more stuff with a jackrabbit in distress than probably anything else. So,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely the number one, you know. So, we got any more questions rolling in there?
Yeah, we have quite a few. What's your favorite caliber for hunting coyotes?
No doubt, 22-250. Yeah, 100%.
Caliber. Yeah. I like 300 spine with 125 grade, with 120 grade 2-inch Schwacker.
Just sitting there piecing the coyotes. Now, I typically save quite a bit of fur. And my partner, Colton Gillum in Wyoming, he loves his 223. And he shoots, you know, like Jeff Nimick, a good friend of mine as well. They shoot 53 grainers, man. These guys just slam coyotes with them. And it's all shot placement. I just love the speed of my 22-250. I've got my lead down on running coyotes over the years. I know where, you know, and it seems like my 223, it takes me two or three shots to get on that running coyote, where my 22-50, I swing up and it just, man, it just lights out for me. It's just so quick. It's just so different. I just like what I like. And I shoot a 223 and I love it, but I have had a lot of coyotes get away from it, but that's probably to do with shot placement, really, when it boils down to it. But I don't go anything typically less than a 223.
Yeah. Austin Jacks just asked, if all the presets on your call, what do you find to be the most effective or alluring?
Definitely pup distress. 100%. If there was one call that I could pick till the end of time, it would be a pup distress. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they decipher a pup distress to a kai-yai to, I don't get into all that. It's a distressed dog, basically. And it's lights out year round, anytime, play it from the start of your stand to the end of the stand, and you're going to have a ton of success with pup distress.
Right. Randy just asked if you ever use a 6.5 Creedmoor for coyote. I don't know. I feel it's a little overgunned, but
it's crazy because I bought my wife a 6.5 Creed, and it is. It's just too much. You know, we're looking at probably selling that gun for that reason. But we do hunt a lot of deer and a lot of spike elk, and that 140 grain bullet we're chucking out of that definitely does the trick for those animals. But it's just a little much. You know, if it's suppressed, I don't think it would be that bad. But an unsuppressed 6.5 is too much.
Yeah,
I like to be comfortable and watch coyotes die in the scope. And that's another thing. I've always ran a 3-9. Now I'm going to be running the Razor Vortex Lightweight Hunter. It's a 3x15. And I keep my scope on 3 power.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, all my buddies are just like, what are you doing? Like what is going on? And I'm like, I find the coyotes when they're running. I typically don't shoot anything over 100 yards. I like 3 power. And Jeff Nimick keeps his scope on 11 power. And I'm like, whoa, are you kidding?
That's crazy.
He kills a ton of coyotes, man. He's a 2-time world champ. And it just blows my mind that these guys can kill these coyotes on 11 power. You know,
that's
so
nuts.
They do it their way. I do it my way. It's just like everybody else.
Yeah, it's just a comfort thing. Whatever you get used to. I mean, I know I couldn't do it. I can't. You know, even when I'm rifle hunting for deer or whatever, I always start at my lowest power and then I crank it up once I'm on them. And that's on a standing still animal, not something running away from you. But yeah, I agree with you. I'm all about the low power. Randy Ellard asked, how often do you call on cats?
I actually, I don't hardly ever set up for Bobcats. The Bobcats that I've called in and over the years, the ones that we've actually seen, I actually had one slide into my buddy's crotch on a set. It came in harder and faster than any coyote I've seen. Neither one of us even got a shot off at it. We didn't have the shotguns with us. It was just one of those things. But out of the five or six cats that I've, you know, tried to kill, this year was my first ever confirmed bobcat kill. And it was with Hidden Instinct, good friends of mine. They actually have a YouTube channel and stuff. Mm-hmm. We caught it on film, and it was emotional for me. It really was. It's been kind of one of those unicorns for me. And they made it happen for me. And Garrett was Garrett's his name. And he was just awesome. I says, man, can I shoot that bobcat? And he's like, yeah. So he let it work off his side over to my side. This is all on film. And I shot that cat in like the 8 minute mark, which doesn't happen very often with bobcats. And I just lost it, man. It's a really neat video. You can see the passion that I have for this sport. It still gives me cold chills just because it's been something that I've really, really wanted to do. I mean, yeah. And I don't set up for cats a lot, but when we do call them in, we capitalize if we've got the tag at the time.
Right.
And I've watched my friends capitalize in front of me, you know, on cats that I've called in, but this year was the first year in the 19 years I've been predator hunting that I was able to close the deal.
Wow. Yeah. I've actually one of my first predators I ever killed with a bow was a bobcat. I consistently I'm sorry, what was that?
You're making me look bad.
I'm sorry, man. Well, I don't have to buy tags for them, so in Arizona we can shoot them all the time. Well, not all the time. There's a season. It's like August when deer season opens, and it closes March 31st. I typically call in, and it goes back to what Garrett was saying earlier. You got to go where cats are at. You know, some of this big open prairie country that you could call a bunch of coyotes in, you're not going to find very many bobcats. You got to look for, you know, I think deeper washes, rockier terrain. Rocky terrain always brings in fox too. If you hunt in the boulders and stuff like that, you're going to get a fox come in. I can guarantee you that. It's just, hunting where they're at. I like to get up an elevation a little bit sometimes on the bobcats, like mid mountain. And I've had a lot of success. I mean, bow hunting, the best I ever did was, I want to say it was either five or six in 1 year.
Wow.
But, I love calling in cats. It's also sound choice too. I think they tend to come into stuff that's a little bit higher pitched. You got to call for longer than you do, with coyotes. And I also found that you got to constantly call. Just like that. It's like that with bears too. Like, I feel like if you stop the call, they'll lose interest and turn around and start walking off sometimes. And I mean, I'm certainly not the authority on it. I've had a lot of success in my life hunting predators, but it's not something that I call myself an expert in. So I'm sure there's somebody out there disagreeing with me right now.
I just wish we had this kind of stuff back when I started. I didn't even have YouTube to look at. And these guys that are listening and wanting to learn, these tools are here now. This stuff like this, man, I can't even imagine. I had to buy VHS tapes to watch Randy Anderson and that, you know. And now you can just hop on YouTube and just do what they do. That's all you got to do. Watch what they're doing. And man, there's just millions and millions and millions of videos. And they're out there. You can learn, man. It's crazy how easy it is to learn these days.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, not just hunting. I mean, you could go to YouTube, anything you want to learn about is there, which is great. I think it's excellent. I love the information side of this, of this business. And I try to delve out as much as I can when people have questions for me. And, you know, my podcast is almost entirely educational. We try to be somewhat entertaining. I hope we're not completely boring, but, I like to, I like to share the knowledge with people because you know what? My dad was a hunter, but his idea of hunting, you know, my uncles, my family was throw on a red jumpsuit and go sit underneath a tree with your Marlin 35 and wait for a deer to walk by. So I didn't really have anybody who could teach me. I learned some woodsmanship and stuff like that, and you know, how to handle firearms and whatnot, the basics. But as far as like, you know, coming up with tactics for deer hunting and whatever, I'm just like you. I was reading books, you know, because there wasn't even VHS tapes on that stuff when I first got into it. You know, I taught myself how to shoot a bow and all that stuff, and it was just, it's probably why I got such shitty form now, but. Yeah, it's amazing what we've been able to do over the last few years.
Right. Yeah, it's awesome. It's definitely cool. What else we got? Anybody else?
Yeah.
Chatting?
Yeah. Jeff, asked what's your go-to call when you start off a set for coyotes?
That kind of goes back to time of the year. Definitely. You know, later, once it turns, for me, really, the end of October, I'm a big-time howler. I'll start every set with a lone pup howl, a lone female howl, something really unaggressive, and then I sit there, and I typically wait 2 to 3 minutes before I start anything else, you know, just really just get it out there. Hopefully, I get – it's weird. If I get a response, and they're within what I think is the kill zone, it just seems like, man, I'm going to kill these coyotes. These coyotes are coming in. There's been times where I look at my friends and I go, you know, are you ready? Like this coyote's going to be in your lap in a second. Right. So I howl, get the response, and then I go to like cottontail distress or something, just real mild and mellow on a low volume. You couldn't believe how these coyotes can hear. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, it's just amazing at how far I've actually watched and witnessed these coyotes come from. And knowing that tells me that I don't need to, you know, if I squeeze a rabbit, that rabbit's not going to be loud on a 10 volume on electronic call. Mm-hmm. It's going to be way down there. And I think that's huge too, is not just blowing coyotes out with that initial first. Work your way up, you know. Right. You're not getting something and you want to touch out there and don't want to go make a set another half a mile away. Turn it up. But yep. At first, don't play it loud. Play it soft, I think. Earlier in the year, a bird distress, something smaller. I love cottontail distresses, things like that, bird distresses. And then later in the year, I'm a huge howler. And I never leave a set, typically. I can't ever say never because I'm sure I have. But
right,
really never leave a set without playing pup distress. There's some sort of pup distress. I mean, there's 1.5 million of them out there, and Rick Paulette has created some of the most amazing sounds on that Lucky Duck Revolution that you'll ever hear in your entire life. The clarity and everything. Just, oh my gosh, mind blowing. And there's sounds on there that just, you don't walk away from sets without playing, you know? And pup distress is definitely one of those. So I mean, I've been at the 15-minute mark, kicked that sucker on, and 18 minutes later, bam, there's a triple blown over the hill, you know? And it's just crazy, you know? I beat my all-time record this year. I kind of hesitant about telling people this story, but Colton Gill and I were in the World Championships this year, and it was the last day. And you're able to drop one of your partners off, and he dropped me on a set, and I went out there. And I started off with some howls, and I got a great response. And what I thought, they were not in the kill zone. They were so far out there, I thought, there's no way, you know, so maybe I'll try to pull something a little closer. Well, I started calling a little bit. I didn't have the shotgun. I just made a quick stand. Get calling, and I was playing some coyote fight sounds. And I see 6, then 7, then 8, then 9, then 10, then 11, then 12 coyotes coming over the hill. And they're 100 yards out, and they're all coming right at me like a pack. And I honestly, 10 to 12 coyotes were bailing at me as fast as they could. Wow. And I didn't know what to do. And I knew I was in a competition where I needed to kill some of these coyotes. And it's just crazy to see that many coyotes come over the hill, but that was because of pup distress, you know, and,
right.
And that's definitely a go-to sound, but I mean, where you play it in the set is up to you. It just depends, but
that's my finishing sound. I like to use pup distress on a finishing or after I've killed one. Yeah, if I've shot one already, I really like to hit that pup in distress. Sometimes you'll get that second one to come in.
Build scenarios. That's what a lot of guys need to learn is just what do you think is happening? Like, okay, you howled. Maybe you're going to answer back with something a little younger. So there, you know, coyotes think that there's two coyotes over here just hanging out together. Well, it goes quiet for a minute. And then all of a sudden, this rabbit starts squealing for 45 seconds straight, and he gets shut off. And their curiosity is like, man, something's going on over the hill. Maybe we ought to go check that out. And then all of a sudden, bam, at the 10-minute mark, you start cranking on pup distress because that bigger coyote's like, hey, man, you're not taking my rabbit. Boom, done, lights out. They're over the hill. They can't take it. It's awesome. I love it. It pumps me up. I get cold chills talking about predator hunting. I love it. There's nothing I would rather do. So,
I have a real affliction for it myself. I learned a lot of my hunting spots from predator hunting because it's way more fun to go into an area and go predator hunting than just to go in there and go scouting. So, I learned a lot of my deer spots and my elk spots and stuff like that because of predator hunting. You know, and you learn a lot about calling in general to animals. You were kind of getting into something, you know, explaining why you did what calls and when you did them. And it made me think of something that I tell people all the time, like when I'm doing seminars or whatever, or I've written in my book, it's creating the illusion. If you can picture in your mind the scenario that's going on, and you create the illusion by adding the sounds where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be, it makes a world of difference. Like, and that goes with anything, we're talking elk hunting, deer hunting, whatever, you know, if the other pieces of the puzzle aren't there, you have run a risk of that animal thinking, I know that sounds good, but usually when I hear that sound, there's this, and that going on, you know, and it's just creating a whole illusion, man. I couldn't, you know, I can't say it any differently. That makes it, you just got to think of it as a whole, holistically, as a whole package. So
you really, really get into that kind of stuff in breeding season in February and March. That's a whole nother beast right there. And that's something that I've just tried to master is a breeding scenario. And this year I had more success for breeding season than I've ever had. And I attribute a lot of that to definitely that call and the sounds that Rick's built. That's a lot of the reason for my success this year. And I'm not sitting here trying to plug the Lucky Duck by any means or Rick's sounds, but they're not paying me. And I'm here to tell you, there's nothing I would rather be doing than running that revolution. And they're not.
Yes.
I'm sure you've reviewed some of those sounds. Maybe you have one, but I mean, it's unmatched. So anyway.
Awesome. Austin Jacks just asked you, as far as time of day, is it basically the same as deer, or where are you? Daybreak and late evening is your best chance. So basically, when's your best chances?
Definitely, for sure. I like those times of the days by far the best. As far as percentages, definitely those two times of the day, late and early, have been the best percentages. But it's been like, you know, some of my, I don't fish, but I know when we do go fishing or whatever, it's crazy. I mean, we've been calling all morning long. All of a sudden, it's the heat of the day in September. It's like pushing 75, 80 degrees. And it kicks on like a light at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Right. You know, you're sitting there wishing you're cracking a cold Coors Light, and all of a sudden, bam, you're back in coyote mode until dark, you know, and you're killing six coyotes from two to dark. It's crazy like that. The coyotes are there when you started in the morning. Why didn't the coyotes want to come and play that time of the day? You know,
right.
It's hit and miss, but definitely percentages. If you want to kill, you know, want to talk percentages, it's just like that. Morning and evening for sure.
Yeah. I kind of made a correlation to a couple things. Like overall mornings have always been best for me. But I play a lot on the moon. If you got half moon to dark moon, almost guarantee that you're in a good area, you're going to call coyote in the morning. And, yeah. And the flip side of that, if you got more than a half moon or to a full moon, I feel like you have a better chance, because those coyotes they've been hunting all night long. They're not necessarily out and about in the morning as much, or they've gone to bed earlier, end up earlier. I feel like you have a really good chance either midday or late afternoon, you know, right? Because now they've been laying down all day because they went to sleep earlier, and they get up a little bit earlier sometimes to get out and start hunting again. And really, you just keep an eye on small game and what their movements are. You know, like, for instance, if you get a really heavy rainstorm at nighttime,
everything was hunkered down.
Yeah, you get out there first thing in the morning, those coyotes are looking, man, because they might have been out looking in the rain and they didn't care about the rain. But I could be, you know, I can assure you that the rabbits and stuff were probably not out eating in you know, torrential downpour. And it's just keeping an eye those little details, I think, that's what make or break you. But in the end, it's just like the lottery. If you're not out there playing, you can't win. So, you know, any chance you get to call. That's, you know, simple as that.
I always get a sick feeling in my stomach when we're headed out. You know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm blowing over the mountain to try to get to my buddy's house in time to get him picked up, and I'm not seeing a ton of jackrabbits on the road. I'm like, shit, man, this is going to be a bad day to call. And then, yeah. And it typically is. I mean, if there's not wildlife running around at night, I don't know. It's like you said, you know, just got to do it. Just got to get out there and test the waters.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, unless we got any other questions over here, which I don't think I don't see any coming through. That's all I got for you today. You know what? Actually, I do have one more. I'm sorry. How do you like to keep the wind? Are you a wind in the face guy, or?
You know, if you can, but you can set up for that kind of stuff now with the technology we've got. You know, you can set up for crosswinds. You can set up for just make sure you know where your wind cone is going.
Yeah.
As long as you know where your wind is blowing, and you got a circling coyote, know when he's going to hit that wall of your scent and get him killed before he hits it, because he's going to be gone. But I mean, I wasn't really a huge player of the wind until this year, and I watched Colton jump out of the truck, and we get halfway to the stand, and he walked back to the truck, and I was like, dude, what are you doing? He says, the wind's not right. I says, well, what about the coyotes, you know, that are going to come from that way? Nah. You know, so Colton plays the wind a lot more than I do.
Right.
It's a good thing, you know, and I've learned a lot from him in certain ways, you know, of what he does. And, you know, I would have still sat down in that set, and I would have still made it. I would have tried to pull it from a different area. I'm not saying it would have worked. Probably wouldn't have worked. And, you know, playing the wind's huge. It really is. It's going to make her, basically, you know? It's a big thing, and I have learned to pay a lot more attention to it.
Yeah. I pay attention to it, particularly when I'm bow hunting them. Mainly I got wind in my face on my approach. And then when I set up to have the wind as a crosswind or perpendicular, because 8 times out of 10, they're going to come in using the wind. And if I do that, I typically get them to come broadside, which is not nearly as important when you got a rifle or a shotgun, but when you're trying to hit it with a bow, it typically works better.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. So now that's all I got for you. If there's anybody else that has any questions, chime in real quick before we jump off here. But why don't you give us a little tell us where listeners can find out more about you and, you know, some of the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, so my biggest social media base is definitely on Instagram. I'm crazy about Instagram. You can follow me at Brush_Wolf_Hunter. That's my personal page. And then I do have a page for sharing everybody's coyote photos. I typically don't just throw up tailgate photos. I try to keep it really unique, cool stuff. But that's Mule_Deer_Insurance. So Mule Deer Insurance. You'll find both those pages on Instagram. And I sell my swag on there, Mule Deer Insurance swag. We got it's a half coyote head, half mule deer head. That's actually a set.
There you go.
Henry Mountains, and we put it on there. But they all say Coyote Sniper on the back. We want to make sure everybody knows that they're coyote snipers too. You know, that's kind of what we're
doing. That's badass.
And Colton and I have started a YouTube channel now. You know, it's not coyote season. We're not cranking out a bunch of videos and stuff, but we started at the wrong time. But we're gonna get going and get kicking off, you know, pretty early next year.
Yeah.
But you can find us on YouTube, and it's under Coyote Snipers, and we've only got 2 videos up right now. But man, they're awesome videos, and we're gonna be competing with everybody, and you know, not competing, but we're just gonna be out there playing the same game as everybody else and trying to do it. That's what we're doing. So
nice.
Just my hats and my swag. DM me and we'll order you some stuff and get it to you. So.
And I'll put all that stuff in the show notes, guys. You know, links to Garrett's Instagram and whatnot when I post this on the Interviews with the Masters website and, you know, on iTunes and whatnot. So that'll be in the show notes for you. And we might be able to, I don't know if it'll let me post it in this live feed after I'm off, but I'll try just to make it a little bit easier. So
the magazine that both of us were recently published in.
Oh yeah. You know, that's how actually Garrett and I became buddies is we both write for Hunt Avid. And he's got a great article in there right now for about coyote hunting. And I just published an article about my desert bighorn sheep in there. So it's a good magazine, good publication. Always got a lot of good guys on it. You know, go pick yourself up a copy and check out his article.
Yeah, they're all at the Sportsman's Warehouses and stuff. So, yeah, check it out. I think it's a pretty good, you know, for me, that was my first article. And I think it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, it was a good read. I liked it.
Yeah, good.
All right, brother. Well, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it and taking the time. And
again, when I can, you know, share it and make sure that I got my followers wanting to come over and ask questions and do some stuff. You know, we'll get a lot more people on here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I typically give people our followers a lot more notice than an hour before we're going to do it. So. Yeah, but definitely like to have you on again. Oh, you cut out. I didn't hear what you said.
Just be like on a Facebook live feed that they can still view even after it's not live?
Yeah, it'll still be there, and you'll actually be able to share it from mine on your page. Yeah, so.
I appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you very much.
See ya.
Bye. Guys, thank you for sticking with us on that. And, you know, like I said, we're giving away that Halon 32. So go on, subscribe to the podcast. Give us a review. We'd like to hear from you. Like to know what you think of the podcasts. And then we're going to pick one lucky winner here on, I think, June 1st, or at least that first week of June. All right. Till next time.